around-the-world marathon flight ends safely in Orlando. Aerospace is a bright spot in the U.S. economy. And U.S. and Brazilian accident investigators reach very different conclusions. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, December 12th, 2008. The team is on the ground. That was the triumphant message on the website for the ALS Dash for a Cure, a seven-day round-the-world marathon flight to raise money and awareness for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, more commonly known as ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. Pilots Carol Ann Garrett and Carol Foy landed their Mooney M20J at Orlando International Airport at about 8:55 a.m. Eastern Time yesterday morning. The women took turns sleeping during the flight and restricted their in-flight diet to two pieces of fruit, two energy wafers, and a few macadamia nuts each day. Foy admitted, quote, "There were a couple of little bitchy moments," unquote, in the cramped cockpit. Quote, "But we found that as soon as we got a little sleep, we were fine," unquote. The landing came at the end of a 3,300 nautical mile, mostly nighttime Atlantic crossing that required watching a storm but also favorable winds. It's not clear if the team set a new world record on their flight. Estimates place the trip's duration at 204 hours, or 8.5 days, including some time wasted in Africa looking for avgas. But the record is secondary. The flight was planned as part of a million-dollar fundraising effort to fight ALS, which claimed Garrett's mother in 2002 and has also impacted Foy's family. They've raised about $415,000 so far. After spending weeks listening to reports of U.S. industries taking a beating, the Aerospace Industries Association is actually forecasting a sales increase in its sector for 2008. AIA CEO Marion Blakey presided over the annual AIA year-end review and forecast on Wednesday. Quote, "We are in an extremely challenging economic atmosphere, but our industry is proving to be remarkably durable. We anticipate this to continue, and we expect our industry will continue to be an asset to the U.S. economy as we climb out of our current financial hardships," unquote. The group expects sales for the year to be up 2.1% to $204 billion, setting a record for the industry for the fifth consecutive year. AIA also projects a trade surplus of $61 billion. That's the largest of any U.S. manufacturing sector. Employment remains strong, averaging about 655,500 for the year, up about 10,000 over 2007. AIA boldly predicts another year of 2-plus percent growth in 2009. This will come as no big surprise, but the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board and the Brazilian Air Force came to different conclusions in their separate investigations of a 2006 mid-air collision over the Amazon. This is that case of the Embraer Legacy 600 that was being ferried to the U.S. by two American pilots when it collided with a Gol Airlines 737 at 37,000 feet. The business jet made a safe emergency landing, but the 737 went down with 154 on board. The NTSB found Brazilian controllers bear most of the responsibility, having issued both aircraft, quote, "clearances which directed them to operate in opposite directions on the same airway at the same altitude, resulting in a mid-air collision. The loss of effective air traffic control was not the result of a single error, but a combination of numerous individual and institutional air traffic control factors, which reflected systematic shortcomings in emphasis on positive air traffic control concepts," unquote. The board noted the possibility that the two U.S. pilots switched their transponder to standby, causing their plane to disappear from controllers' radar screens and the 737's TCAS system, and called that a contributing factor in the crash. The Brazilian Air Force, on the other hand, which handles the nation's air traffic control, took some blame on its own system and controllers, but suggested U.S. pilots Joseph Lepore and Jan Palladino should have been more cognizant of their surroundings and more familiar with their airplane. Another controversy surrounding that crash has to do with Vanity Fair magazine. In connection with its article titled "The Devil at 37,000 Feet," the magazine has released the complete cockpit voice recorder audio file on its website. The January 2009 issue of the magazine also includes a transcript. In the U.S., public release of the actual audio recordings would be illegal. As we've come to learn, under Brazilian aviation law, your mileage may vary. Gideon Ewers of the International Federation of Air Pilots Associations is outraged that the last few moments of a pilot's life could become a public novelty. Quote, "They should never be used as a means to provide what can only be described as voyeuristic entertainment to the public at large," unquote. The magazine defends its use of the recordings. Spokeswoman Beth Kiseniak said in an email to the Associated Press that the magazine chose to make the recordings available, quote, "because they are newsworthy and serve as documentation," unquote. On Tuesday, a Brazilian federal judge dismissed negligence charges against the two U.S. pilots, but let stand involuntary manslaughter charges, for which they could face criminal prosecution if they ever returned to Brazil. The two were detained in the country for 2 months following the incident before being allowed to return home. Paladino still works for XL Air. The New York Times reports Lepore now flies for American Airlines. Up next on ANN, Boeing finally announces a fourth Dreamliner delay. Production gaffes lead to more realignment in Boeing management. And an Angel flight makes a safe forced landing in a frozen soybean field. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for December 12th. I'm Paul Plack. Boeing yesterday quietly announced an updated schedule for its 787 Dreamliner program that moves the commercial jet's first flight into the second quarter of 2009 and first delivery into the first quarter of 2010. The company says the new schedule, quote, "reflects the impact of disruption caused by the recent machinist strike, along with the requirement to replace certain fasteners in early production airplanes," unquote. This is Boeing's fourth announcement of a delay in the Dreamliner's development. Until the 57-day IAM strike this fall, the company had stuck to its story that the first flight would happen this quarter. Pat Shanahan, 787 program VP, said, quote, "We're laser-focused on what needs to be done to prepare for first flight. We will overcome this set of circumstances as we have others in the past, and we understand clearly what needs to be done moving forward," unquote. Boeing also announced yesterday a series of executive leadership changes and a restructuring within Boeing Commercial Airplanes to, quote, "better align resources across its development and production programs and strengthen oversight of its global supply chain," unquote. That supply chain oversight was badly embarrassed last month when contractor Spirit AeroSystems told the company it had become aware that hundreds of Boeing airliners had been built with hundreds of thousands of nut plate fasteners which had not received the required cadmium coatings to prevent corrosion. Nut plates are used behind panels where access with a wrench or other tools would be difficult or impossible, so replacing thousands of the plates on each airplane will be a daunting task if it proves necessary. Effective immediately, commercial airplanes, supplier management, fabrication, propulsion systems, and the Manufacturing and Quality Functional Organization are part of a new organization called Supply Chain Management and Operations, led by Ray Connor. The 53-year-old has extensive experience in program leadership and manufacturing and supply chain management. He most recently was vice president of sales for commercial airplanes at Boeing. All current production and development programs, including the 787 Dreamliner and the 747-8, are being brought together in a new airplane programs organization, reporting to Pat Shanahan, who was formerly VP and general manager of just the 787 program. Scott Carson, CEO of Boeing Commercial Airplanes, said, quote, "These moves will help drive results through our entire development and production system, deliver value to our customers, and enhance our overall competitiveness," unquote. A Cessna 210 Centurion, operating as an Angel flight, made an emergency landing in a Minnesota field on Wednesday after the pilot reported engine trouble. KAAL-6TV in Rochester reports the aircraft left St. Paul's Holman Field Wednesday morning with three people on board. Pilot Robin Blakehalb was transporting a cancer patient to Waukegan, Illinois for treatment, accompanied by another passenger. The engine problems happened over the town of Lake Elmo, forcing Blakeholb to put the plane down on a frozen soybean field. Photos from the scene show no apparent damage to the aircraft, and the field looks long enough for a takeoff again once the problem's repaired. Blakeholb has flown 25 Angel Flight missions and is being commended for the good landing. There were no injuries. The nation's only privately operated commercial airport is set to open in May in Branson, Missouri. The project is being watched carefully to see what developers will do with their freedom from FAA red tape. Among the freedoms the airport has is offering preferential deals to individual airline partners, limiting competition on particular routes to ensure they can be profitable. The first taker will be low-cost carrier AirTran. USA Today reports the airline will begin one flight per day to and from its Atlanta hub when the airport opens May 11th at an introductory rate of $99 one way. The formal announcement was made yesterday. Construction of Branson Airport began in July of 2007. A single 7,400-foot runway is complete so far, and work is underway on a 58,000-square-foot four-gate terminal. Still ahead, airline passenger volume drops abruptly. AirTran's pilot union is rebuffed by the Teamsters. And what are the odds your airline will go bankrupt? You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, December 12th. I'm Paul Plack. The latest statistics from the Department of Transportation are making airline decisions to cut capacity look pretty smart. The number of scheduled domestic and international passengers on U.S. airlines during September dropped 8.4% from the same period last year. It made the seventh consecutive monthly year-to-year decline and the largest percentage monthly decrease since August of 2002. DOT's Bureau of Transportation Statistics also broke out the numbers for domestic and international travel separately in making its announcement yesterday. Domestic enplanements were down 8.9%. International was down 5%. That makes the first drop in international passengers since August of 2003. Southwest carried the most domestic passengers, while American held on to the international lead. You can find more detail in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. For years, about 1,600 pilots at AirTran Airways have been represented by the National Pilots Association. That's a relatively small independent union. The NPA has been trying for years to negotiate a contract with AirTran without success. The pilots want more money. The airline wants to cut pilot-related costs by more than 12%. The two sides reached a tentative agreement last year, but then AirTran withdrew its offer. The talks are now in mediation, and frustrated AirTran pilots voted to oust NPA's former president and VP. Things obviously are not going too well. And so, the NPA started looking into gaining more clout by partnering with either the Airline Pilots Association, which represents pilots at most major U.S. airlines, or the Teamsters Airline Division. Talks with ALPA haven't happened yet, but the Teamsters have looked at the situation and decided to pass. On Wednesday, Captain David Bourne, director of the Teamsters Airline Division, met with the board of directors of the NPA, then announced shortly afterward, quote, "Given the current volatility of the airline industry and the tendency toward continued consolidation, it is to everyone's benefit that the pilots at AirTran strengthen their own organization before entertaining any other representational possibilities. We remain in solidarity with our union brothers and sisters at AirTran and are ready to assist them in their endeavors. However, we are not planning to pursue a more official relationship at this time," unquote. AirTran executives are steering clear of the talks. Stephen Kolsky, AirTran's executive VP of Operations and Corporate Affairs, would say only, quote, "If there's going to be a change, when that change happens, we'll bargain with the replacement union," unquote. ALPA, meanwhile, is proud of the new contract it negotiated for pilots at Mesa Air Group. The pilots have ratified a contract proposal, which the union says will elevate them from their spot among the lowest paid in the industry and offer many industry standard and industry leading provisions. ALPA acknowledged the razor-thin 51-49 margin of the approval and noted there's more work to be done by the company. The union says the deal provides Mesa pilots with immediate scheduling and quality of life improvements, including a true definition of scheduled or actual flying time, and the implementation of a preferential bidding system that will allow the pilots more control over their schedules. The next time the two sides meet will be in 21 months, when the union hopes the company and the industry will be in better financial shape. Finally, the gaming industry offers gamblers the chance to place bets on everything from football games to elections. So it should probably come as no surprise to hear that one Irish website has launched with a promotion in which patrons were given the chance to bet on which airline will fail next. The Guardian reports PaddyPower.com attracted headlines and a fair share of wagers with the stunt, but ran afoul of the Advertising Standards Authority, which put a halt to the campaign, claiming the promotion unfairly suggested the airlines were actually at risk and some at more risk than others. So they're trying to say that's not true? Well, anyway, you're probably wondering how the odds stacked up. Paddy Power bettors decided Spanair has one chance in four of going tango uniform, which incidentally are the same odds that God will physically manifest on Earth before December 31st, 2009. By comparison, bettors felt the odds of Ryanair or British Airways failing were 100 to 1. Now we have to run the disclaimer. The preceding information was presented as entertainment, not investment advice. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, I'll talk with Bob Warner, who retired from his senior VP position at EAA back in February, but is back now as a volunteer to head the Fly for Life program at AirVenture 2009. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.